Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 307. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Hey, it's got me getting upbeat, man. Yeah.
And Phil Wilson.
Good morning.
You used the German one, didn't you?
Guten Morgen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. How about that?
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Fine. All right.
Well, my daughter's home safe and sound from Germany. Sorry, I'm a happy man.
And you should be.
And Graham is celebrating a birthday, so.
Oh, yay! Shucks.
That's right. Stepdad. That's right. That's right. Send all of your gifts to P.O. Box.
I think you should send gifts to Graham. Graham deserves gifts.
Yeah.
That's right.
I do. Yeah.
That's
when
right.
When you get as distinguished as he.
Distinguished. Very
there
well
you
said.
Go, yeah.
Very well
I got to head to the Apple store and spend a lot of money today. So ooh, send gift
yeah.
cards.
There ooh, we go.
Are you going to go buy your new Mac?
You know, I'm going pro, baby. I've taught myself. I can't get the new MacBook. You can order it on the 10th, and God knows when you'd see it a couple weeks later. But I talked myself out of it, and Steve helped me make my decision.
It's not the best machine for a lot of people, especially power users. There's a lot of compromises.
Yeah.
Yes, yep.
It is.
And if you look at the cost difference between a Pro and that MacBook, you get so much more performance, and not to mention all the ports and stuff on the Pro.
Yeah. Yep. It's only half a pound more. No, it's almost 2 pounds against the new one, but it's only like half a pound up from the MacBook Air.
Which is what I've been using for 2+ years. So, so that's what I'm going to do. Got to have that Retina screen. And
oh, man, you're going to love it.
So all I'm going to do is call the Uptown store, see if they have it in stock, 512, 8 gigs of RAM, and just go get the doggone thing,
There you go.
Yep.
And
yep.
beat the rush. Beat the April 10th rush.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, if you ever need more memory and hard drive, you can just... pry it open. Get a can opener and just kind of pry open the bottom and pull it out of there. Resolder new memory.
If you're going to do that, you get your Apple Care.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly.
Very definitely.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right. Minnesota Big Stories, the number one, Code 42, focusing on an IPO.
That's not a story.
That was in last Sunday's paper. It's and we not talk a about
story.
It. Yeah, I don't know. It seems like a PR deal.
We talked about that. We talked about that ages ago.
Yeah. Well, it was in the paper last week, and there weren't a lot of local stories, so I thought I'd throw it in.
Yeah. It was definitely a story.
Well, I actually sent a tweet to Neil St. Anthony, thanking him for somebody finally doing an update. I mean, they just kind of went quiet. But you're right, they may have reached out to do the update, but people were kind of wondering what's going on,
Went IPO quiet or they went IPO or they,
no,
went,
they
quiet
went
after
quiet.
The building thing?
They went quiet after the building thing. And there was conjecture that maybe they're in play and we'll never know if they were talking. I mean, they could be talking to potential acquirers all the time, but they kind of shut that off and said, no, we're just going about our business, and things are cool, and we've got enough space now, and so it was nice that at least somebody finally did an update on him. I was seriously thinking of trying to do a story on him myself, but how I am with blogging. I don't do it very often. No time.
All right.
So I think the other story about Best Buy deciding to spend money on stores and technology, that's also not real news, is it?
Not, except though that they're going to go with these new electronic cash register thingies instead of using the ones with that go ching, and pop up the little metal thing and with the price on it.
Boy, that's a long way to go for a joke.
It was really bad. Okay, never mind.
Strange trip.
It's early. I'm only about halfway through my first cup of coffee, so.
Cha-ching.
As things go on, you'll speed it up.
Yeah. But you know what? In all seriousness, I was reading this article thinking, wait, on stores and technology. What technology exactly?
Well, what have they been spending it on before that?
Oh, yeah.
stores and technology is what they do.
And information technology projects. Okay.
Yeah. A lot of retailers, they have to upgrade their technology to do omnichannel. You know, the
right. No.
So they're doing the same thing Target's doing.
Sure.
What's interesting is that they're consolidating their Canadian operations. They're not pulling out, but they're shutting down, 60 odd stores there.
Yeah. The underperformers for sure.
Yeah, and they, you know, they bought into Future Shop up there, so maybe they're just going straight Best Buy, you know, to consolidate the brand as well.
Yeah. Now, Graham, this next story that was in the Minneapolis St. Paul Business Journal about where techies find jobs, you pushed back on that on Twitter, didn't you?
No, I don't think I did, but I missed that session at the Tech Cities event, and I wish I could have gotten into it, but I, you know, you had to choose which sessions, breakouts you were going to, and apparently Kathy Grayson caught this, and it's up on the web as a free read, but I haven't had a chance to drill into it. Did you, Tim? Did you see?
Yeah, I put it in for the infographic, which is interesting.
Which was a good graphic, but you know, here it is. But where are Twin Cities techies finding jobs? I can tell you. Technology.
Yeah. No, we're all being greeters at Walmart. That's right.
Well,
I know, I'm sticking my neck out on that, but that's where they're going. Yeah.
Well, and the top destination of where they're moving to, San Francisco. Right. Like, we didn't know that, but India, number two, what? And then Chicago, New York City, and Seattle make total sense. But India was kind of interesting.
But that's surmising that second to in the Twin Cities, right?
Well, the gist of the story is where, I guess it's not the whole story. It's when they do move, where do they go is part of the story.
Yeah.
But companies that hired the most tech talent over the past 12 months, Target, United Health, Best Buy, Medtronic, Wells Fargo, that's not real surprising, except maybe Wells Fargo. Where tech talent leaving Minnesota goes to.
Yeah.
Amazon, Microsoft, this is the order. Amazon, Microsoft, Google, Apple. I know a guy.
Lockheed Martin.
Yeah, that's a little weird. Rocket scientist. Epic Systems Corp over in Madison, the electronic health records company. I think
Are these college graduates that they're basing this on?
I don't know. You'd have to drill in to see. It's LinkedIn data.
Oh, it's LinkedIn data. That's right.
Yeah.
And someone from LinkedIn came and presented, and I think it's a former, it's a Carlson grad who came out and presented. And I wish I could have gotten into that session, but I was obligated to go to something else. But apparently the Business Journal opened up the full story for free to those who visit Business Journal on LinkedIn, Twitter, or Facebook. You know, it is a subscription publication,
right?
And they do protect certain stories. You got to go buy the print edition or subscribe to read the full thing. But this one they opened up if you visit them on LinkedIn, Twitter, or Facebook. So that's worth doing.
Well, I'm kind of flummoxed by the India one, and I can only surmise that it's people who have migrated back to India.
Well, that's how about Tata Consulting Services, which has a large portion of the 8300 building on Lake Normandale?
Yep.
You know, it's got to be those kind of people who come over here for 6 months and go back, you know.
Yeah.
Otherwise, how would you explain that?
We'll have to do some investigative podcast journalism to be able to figure that one out. So.
We'll count on you for that, Steve.
After you, Phil, really?
No, really. Go, Steve.
Does anybody have time to do a post?
No, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking that's what Steve could do because he's the guy with the most time on his hands.
Yeah, right. Yeah. lots of time. Yep.
Every time I think I don't have any time to blog, then I see Steve.
Think about Steve.
And he's still blogging. And it's like, and all the things he does, it's like, I got to get my game back here, you know?
Well,
Porsche's got game. That's all there is to it.
That's because I have a bride, too, that is a driver. And so, you know, it's stuff like we'll sit down and watch a movie and she's up walking around getting her steps. It's like, oh, there you- sit down, for God's sakes.
Would you light? Jeez.
I thought you meant she was whipping you into blogging all the time.
No, oh, yeah, but of course, that's why post. That's why she weighs the same as when we got married, and I don't. So, yeah. Oh, God. Well, anyway. So
you take on all the responsibility in your house, Steve.
That's well right. A lot of heavy lifting. That's right. Yeah.
So, all right. Anywho.
Yeah. So Zivik's the Jamstick guitar thing. They hit their Kickstarter goal in 4 hours. That's amazing. Well,
we talked about that a little bit last week. And
we did.
You had mentioned that one of the strategies now is to set the goal low.
Yeah.
No, Tim said that, right?
Tim said that. That's right. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Or I did.
Graham said it.
Or yeah, Graham said that. That's right.
Well, you know, the important thing is that somebody said it. I heard it. And I just referenced right, it. So yeah. There you go.
Yeah, the podcast would say it.
Yeah, we all thought about it collectively, but yeah, I think they blew past the record that Spark Devices set. You know, when they set their last one, they raised $500K or whatever. Didn't they blow by it in about 8 hours or?
Well, no, they're sitting at 295,000 right now. They've got 32 more days to go. They've got 1,100 backers.
I thought Kickstarter campaigns were 30 days.
Yeah, I don't know.
Most are, but I think you can elect 45 as well. But it seems like most people do it 30, I think. I don't know.
Anyway, so that's the next version.
It's good to see them go.
Yeah.
You know, we'll keep track of them.
Yep. Yep. Indeedy do.
Another 30 days.
At least for another 30 days.
And then I put this other, Twin Cities Business Magazine. It's a long piece on Polaroid. Did you guys get a chance to look at this?
I kind of peeked at it.
Yeah, I just skimmed it.
Yeah, interesting story.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you recap it for the listeners?
Well, I mean, it just kind of goes through the whole history of the company and a little bit on the Polaroids at the end. And, you know, it's kind of a sad deal that now they're, you know, they're around because they have this iconic brand, similar to Kodak, actually. And I think Kodak is headed in the same direction. They don't produce anything. They collect licensing fees for the name. They do distribute a few products that, you know, or they stick their name on a few products of other people that fit. And that's the way that they kind of make money these days. It's a much leaner organization, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's hard. It's kind of, I don't know. It's tough to see a brand like Polaroid that had great technology that really revolutionized photography back in the 60s kind of go through this. And, you know, I'd like to see some sort of rebirth of both Polaroid and Kodak as you know, technology photography companies. And both of them seem to be, you know, just this this kind of licensing deal. So that's a sad.
This does look like a great story, though. Dale Kirshner, the editor-in-chief himself, wrote this piece. This is really good. He's got the whole timeline of Edward Land, how he left Harvard in 26. And we were talking about this a couple podcasts back, weren't you, Steve, how he was really admired by Steve Jobs.
He was.
Really looked to Edwin. Is Edwin Land?
Edwin Land.
Yeah, as an innovator. And by God, he was. But
I'll tell you what. One of the saddest things ever was I was staying in Harvard Square for a meeting, and I was jogging by the river, Charles River.
You were jogging?
Now, this was a while ago. Yeah.
Somebody was chasing him.
I was maybe 35. Yeah, the Boston police were after me. But I looked up, and there was the Polaroid concrete headquarters, and, you know, in its Art Deco style, and, you know, it was empty. And I looked at that, and I just thought, oh, man, seriously, it's gone? And, you know, sad stuff.
Yeah, it is. I got one question, though. Did you park your car in Harvard Yard?
No.
Have to get that in there.
Long way to go for a joke again.
Wow. That's right.
We've journeyed far today.
But you know, this story, what's really good about this is it gave Tom Petters something to read down at Leavenworth, you know?
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Well, there's always a silver lining.
There is, you know, and Dale Kirshner came through.
Oh, my God. Well, you got to feel particularly sad, though, Tim. I mean, with your Kodak background and
yeah, there's a big Kodak story this last week. I didn't stick it in the notes, but it was from the New York Times that basically, you know, the new CEO lives in San Francisco, commutes to Rochester when he needs to, is really a guy that's made a reputation of breaking up and selling off assets. And that's exactly what he's doing with Kodak right now. They're mining the research labs and all the patents, and they're just trying to raise money by selling out all this stuff off.
Yeah.
So I'll stick the story in the notes. It's just a sad situation.
It is sad.
Yep.
Yeah.
So when I saw the Polaroid one, you know, it's a similar sitch.
Yeah, similar.
Well, let's talk about something happy and upbeat, which is something that I thought was pretty cool was the article that Julio Ojeda Zapata wrote in his tech weblog about the St. Paul Library lending out hotspots.
Which I think is a great idea.
I thought that was really clever because you can hand out a hotspot and you can also limit how much data is on it.
Right.
And so, you know, you don't have to worry about handing this hotspot out and then, you know, somebody's going to, you know, download 300 movies or something off BitTorrent and use up, you know, 200 gigs of data because you can just put a cap on it.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
I think that, you know, sharing the internet or checking out the internet is kind of a cool idea. So,
well, especially that, like he put in here, 22% of St. Paul households have no internet service in the home.
Wow.
So, you know, that brings up another point, and I'll see if I can find the data on this, but there was an article about how many people, even in the U.S., strictly use their smartphone for their primary internet access. And I know my sister and brother-in-law, that's what they had for really up until a year ago, and then they finally put in internet and a Wi-Fi router and all that. But
well, there was a Pew study that I almost stuck in the notes that had the stat to that. This came out this week.
Yeah.
It was like 10% of millennials or something like that. I mean, it was a big number.
Here it is right here. I'm looking at it. I'll put a link in the show notes. 10% of Americans own a smartphone but do not have broadband at home, and 15% own a smartphone but say that they have a limited number of options for going online other than their cell phone. That's pretty cool.
I think it was 65% did own a smartphone, though. And 10% of those didn't have any other kind of internet access.
Right.
So,
welcome to this episode of Fun with Percentages.
That's right.
Indeed. Yeah.
Phil, it's all about facts. Come on.
It is true. I love it when we actually have facts to back up our bullshit. That's what I love.
That's right. Yeah,
it really makes me feel good.
Nothing better.
Yeah.
But I think it's a great idea. You know, I'll be interested to see if it spreads beyond St. Paul, if other libraries have that in mind.
Yeah.
Or they're actually doing it and we just don't know it.
Could be.
They could be poets and not know it.
But there you go.
So our pal Julio wrote something else about Minneapolis's Jamf software. They've got
a review.
A review of Bushel. Well, the post that he had is just a link to his review.
Right. On tidbits.
But it's a good review because I went through the website looking at Bushel and didn't really see some of the things that he refers to, which is really good because he dug in and learned more about it than just the surface stuff that I was poking around at.
Is that something that you'd be interested in, Steve? Because I was thinking about, you know, the number of devices that I have. You ever thought about having some sort of a piece of software that kind of controls them all?
Well, in fact, I have. You know, I'm a big fan of Infinite WP, this tool that allows me to manage multiple WordPress sites, very inexpensively, I may add. I'm a big fan of those sorts of tools. It's just that, you know, the devices that we have, it's a lot more manageable than I guess I would need to step up and get something like this.
So. This is pretty cool. It's for non-technical people, and you can manage as few as three devices using this for free forever. For free.
Yeah.
And but you can add $2 per device per month for additional devices. Hmm. When did they just introduce this? Is this like a brand new?
It's been out for a few months.
Oh, it has. Yeah. Okay.
We talked about it a while back.
Oh, it must have been on one of the podcasts I missed then.
Yeah, I think you were.
Because bushel, bushel is not a word that I associated with JAMP software.
Well, it's a bushel of apples.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, yeah, see? Yeah.
I get it.
That's there, yeah.
I get it.
Well, you know what? Cool. I went down to, not their user conference, but they had a simulcast announcement of some new products and services and so on. Now, this is last year, and I was absolutely stunned and blown away by some of the things that they did to accelerate and extend Apple's VIP program. Because one of the problems is you're a corporation. You have this bring your own device policy, and you're giving out the corporate devices to people. Well, that's great, except all the ones that are owned by people, you want to also be able to push apps to and have some management restrictions in place. And so when they use that app, they have to be using the VPN and yada, yada, yada. Right. And these guys had done all kinds of very smart workarounds that were authorized by Apple. Apple said, sure. Yeah, you can do that. So I'm really impressed by some of the things that they're doing to make, device management so much simpler. It's a good company. They're doing a good job.
They're an amazing company, you know, and, I saw our friend Chip at the, recent Enterprise Rising event. He gave a really great talk, and, you know, I think these guys are at something like 380 employees now. And he said, we're going to be at 500 real soon. I mean, this company is on a rocket ship ride, you know, and God, it just started out of small, you know, group, a couple of guys, you
humble
know,
not, beginnings. As
not that, yeah, not that many years ago.
Well, and they started when people were kind of like, seriously, you're going to have a management tool for Apple stuff in the corporate. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, who the hell's using that stuff?
Yeah. Well, you know, and with the growth in the enterprise that Apple's looking at with IBM, I mean, it only puts these guys in an even better position, you know. They're one of our amazing startup stories in the state for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what is it? Yeah. In fact, Apple and IBM right now have what, 48 apps?
Yeah.
Is that the number that I saw this week?
Something like that. Yeah.
Just this incredible first wave of banking and various financial solutions, and they're building stuff for healthcare and airlines, and oh my gosh. Okay. So here's I'll put the TechCrunch article in that talks about this. They're moving forward. So the acceptance is growing pretty dramatically.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yes, sirree.
Well, and you know, there's one little hiccup, by the way, because I happened to be at one of Allina Health's facilities this week and was trying to get on there using their Wi-Fi. And they do say this when you connect up that, oh, by the way, you can't, you know, you're behind a proxy server and all of that. But I tried to connect through my VPN, and it was doing what's called DNS leaking.
I hate when that happens.
I mean, yeah, me too.
You gotta wipe it up.
You get all wet.
You gotta have a paper towel. Yeah.
But it was leaking header information and all kinds of stuff. So the VPN was still encrypting the page, but it wasn't functioning. So, you know, I wasn't going to log into my client servers and stuff like that. Just because I didn't trust it. Then I started thinking about all the people with all the devices who are going to be using public Wi-Fi, and they're all exposed, all of them, because 100% of all their traffic's going through this proxy server, and somebody can just sit there and look at the logs. Yep. Now, not to say they will, but, they're also using a third party service. So there was, you know, I had a lot of concern about what was going on, but anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty easy to be exposed at a hospital, you know, those gowns especially.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, honey, you want to look at my Wi-Fi?
Hey, there was another long trip for a joke right there. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, this is bad.
We put on some serious miles today, folks. Anyway. Yeah.
The visuals conjured up, though, are just amazing.
Before we talk about, you know, what some of the big national news we did, the segue story is obviously the little piece on Al Franken and his crackdown on revenge porn. Kind of set of a local, national kind of thing going on. But I know that Senator Franken's been working on that sort of thing for quite some time. It's sort of his overview.
And the guy in San Diego got 18 years in prison. Did you see that story?
Well, I did. You know,
I did not.
Yeah. And you know what? Not only did he get 18 years, but you know what he was doing? It was not only was he making it simple for people to post, and he had required fields before you could upload, like you got to put in the Facebook, a link to their Facebook profile and, you know, things like that, and put their real name in there and other data. But then he had a second site that he would then send to these people saying, if you want your stuff removed, it'll cost you $300 to $500.
Yep. Ooh.
And so he made,
he was blackmailing people.
That's extortion.
Exactly. Yep. So he was making 30, he made 30 grand off of this site in 1 year. And that's of course, one of the,
clearly he wasn't asking enough money for a year for 30 grand.
Well, but you know, here's the other thing.
How stupid he's a dumbass. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, how stupid can you be to be? I mean, how easy is it for you to get tracked down if you're offering a web service?
Well, you know, that's what I like about Franken coming out. He's trying to protect us from stupid people. Thank you, Al.
Well, it's good that he's getting out in front, because a lot of Congress aren't doing it. As a story pointed out, it's him and some woman from California, Republican.
So, Jim, you're not up in arms that Franken's trying to govern the internet?
Well, no. This kind of thing is, you know, needs some attention. It's a problem. It's a problem.
Oh, I see.
Well, it's a legality thing.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
It's okay to manage that, but the whole, you know, free internet.
Yeah, no, I think the net neutrality thing.
Net neutrality.
Crap.
Sorry,
it's crap, but it won't be enacted in law. So
all right, you two.
I'm not seriously worried about it.
Let's shake hands and go back to our respective corners.
Like you're picking and choosing what you want regulated.
All right, so let's talk about other top stories, because this one really concerned me, because
Tim and I are going to argue.
I just bought another 200 shares of Microsoft, so. Goldman Sachs came out on Microsoft and said, sell now.
They're just being contrarian.
I think they're full of crap.
Well, I do too.
Eyebrows.
I do
Goldman
too.
Goldman Sachs hasn't been in the news for anything positive for such a long time. They were just thinking, let's do something.
Yeah. Well, it is legitimate that they do have concerns about the core business. You know, I didn't know what the DNC licensing is. Is that the licensing on platforms?
Basically Nadella's strategy is they're not going to make money on Windows anymore. So that's why they're giving it away free in a lot of cases, or it's very inexpensive.
Ten is free.
For people that have Windows 7 or 8 already installed. If you have XP, you have to buy it, actually, buy 7 or whatever.
Well, if you have XP, it's likely you don't have enough hardware to run 10.
Although 10 is very efficient. Yeah. So whatever. But anyway, it's a bold move, but I think it's the right one.
Sure,
and they're going to make money. And I think their strategy of selling Office is very interesting. And they're trying to be relevant in mobile, which they need to be. So they're making all the right moves. Now, it still could turn out to be that they're not able to execute and they're not successful. But I think that if they weren't doing this, that's the time to sell, because they would be in a kind of a
downward spiral.
Denial phase.
I think Goldman Sachs is probably, most investment firms are more interested in the short term. And when you look at a Microsoft who's now taking a long-term view, it doesn't look as good to Wall Street because right. there's not instant money. Next quarter, you're not going to see a boost. You're going to see it over, you know, 2 or 3 years rather than in 2 or 3 quarters. And that doesn't sit well with the street.
Well, and there are risks. I mean, there's incredible risks, but guess what? If there weren't, then why would somebody have to try to be competitive? Like we talked about, I think last week, Office 365 and the new release of Office on the Mac, there are a lot of tools that are really nice. Outlook for iOS devices, the Mail app, which you can use with any mail account, mm-hmm. is probably one of the best mail apps I've ever used. It's really good. And so they're doing a lot of really smart stuff and good stuff, and they certainly have enough engineering to.
Yeah. Well, I think Goldman Sachs, their horizon is the next quarter or the next year, mm-hmm. and it's going to take longer than that before you're going to see a lot of a lot of this turnaround to happen. But yeah. I think they're on the right track, definitely.
Yeah. If you believe, you got to be a buy and hold guy on Microsoft.
That's right.
There you go.
That's what right. I am.
Long-term money.
That's right.
There you go.
Well, speaking of buy and hold, I'd like to buy and hold 2 gigabit per second broadband from Comcast.
Nicely segued. Oh, nicely good. Segued.
Thanks, guys.
Tim probably knows more about this because he does some. You're still doing some work for Comcast.
Yeah, disclosure. I do disclosure, work with Comcast locally, but no, I don't know anything more. And if I did, I couldn't say.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So for
everybody listening, Comcast rolled out 2 gigabit per second service in an area that is adjacent to an area that Google just Fiber
north,
is in.
Just north of the line to.
Yeah, yeah.
this area here over on right and bordered by, it's a very small area.
Well, look at what CenturyLink is doing and look at U.S. Internet's doing.
I know.
It's available like one block,
It's a start.
Right.
Yeah.
I can't get it in my house yet.
It's a technology, proof of concept.
Steve is the only guy I know that will move to get better broadband service.
Hey, I'm telling you, in all seriousness, there are two builders in Minneapolis that, every place you'll turn around, it's luxury apartments, rather than condos or townhomes or, nobody's building any of that. They're building luxury apartments.
Yes.
Because they can charge a lot of rent and they can make a lot of money. And then when it starts to dip, then they can, do a condo conversion and sell them. Which is a great strategy. But anyway, the punchline is that there are some builders in Minneapolis that are looking at doing high-speed fiber in all the buildings that they're going to build.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, maybe I should look at the condo downtown instead of we're looking at some in Edina and other places.
Tim, what do you get? We're on Charter here. So, Tim, what do you get? What are you using as far as internet speed from Charter? Are you using their 40?
I get their 6. I think it's 60.
I think it is.
Yeah, they just raised it. It was 25 or 30.
Yes, it was. It was 30.
Yeah. And they've just doubled it. I don't get quite that, but I get, 45 or 50, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And I think I don't know what I would necessarily do with 2 gig. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's fast enough, I think, for what I'm doing. As long as I can stream, HD, I'm happy.
Same here. Yeah.
So, I don't know what you'd do with it. I'm sure Steve would figure out something to do with it.
Steve would be,
but he's not your average consumer.
Well, and I think I'm at 75 down and 20 up.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But, even if I had 2 gigabit per second up and down, what the hell? I mean, what am I going to do? Walk around tethered to Ethernet? Because that's the only way you're going to get that kind of gigabit per second throughput.
You're definitely not a wired guy, so no, you're not going to be doing that.
Well, I have 802.11ac
routers,
but still, that's just theoretical throughput. They're not anywhere close to that.
I mean, even if you only had half of that and we're at 1 gig, I mean, it's still plenty fast. And this is symmetrical from what I understand on this,
exactly.
Right? So it's up and down.
Which, but I tell you what, if you want to back up your stuff online,
that would be killer,
that would be awesome. But boy, it'll probably be 5 years before we can do that.
Yeah.
So anyway,
this is just, you know, something we did talk about, that, you know, installing fiber to the home is not the only way to get fast internet, that there will be DOCSIS 3.1 rolled out. And this is what the result of that.
Right.
Right. So yep. you might not see 2 gigs with your connection in the next year or two, but you may see something that's a lot faster than you currently have now, which may be good enough for you.
Well, DOCSIS 3.1, it's 10 gigabits per second down and 1 to 2 gigabit per second up, theoretical connections. So they could offer service like that. Pardon me.
Wow.
So,
yeah, it's a lot of overkill, I think, but it's a start.
Well, and we don't need to go that fast, because according to the Harvard Business Review, the internet has been a colossal economic disappointment.
Well, we've talked about that before. You know, it's technology in general is a job killer. So,
yeah.
Well, David Al, though, is an interesting guy, because he wrote about the virtual corporation back in the 80s, I want to say.
Yeah.
Something like that. I mean, he's a guy that's taking a long view of technology and has covered it for 40-odd years. Mm-hmm. And he makes some good points in that. That's why I put it in. That, you know, that the internet is different than any other industry that we've seen. You can be a very successful company and you have radically fewer employees than anything that's come before it.
Well,
he points to the things that we've talked about in the past, that concept of businesses that rely on the internet that don't necessarily create jobs. You know, I think he referenced the robots at Amazon and things like that. So,
well,
that ripple effect down from the technology.
Well, here's what I loved is toward the end of his article. He talks about millennials being the harbinger of this new trend about moving away from, traditional kinds of product purchases and so on. The number of cars purchased by people 18 to 34 years old has fallen by almost 30%. Millennials are opting to spend their money on high-tech things like tablets, smartphones, and high bandwidth access. And what's interesting is seeing a page out of my grandfather's diary in, 1915 or 1918, where he was talking about this automobile that a guy down the street had purchased, and he was talking about it and was clearly lusting after this new thing. And I'm sure that was a disappointment to the carriage manufacturers and the horse sellers. And
you just can't get money scooping manure anymore.
Exactly. Hey, times are a change in here, Bill Davidow. So
yeah, but that's exactly the point. I mean, it's not doing the middle class any favors. Yeah.
No, it's not.
Which we talk about every political cycle. It's that job growth, that job creation, that job shrinkage. Oh my God, it's everybody's fault. You know, it's technology's fault. We continue to grow up. Our economy is different than it was 30 years ago because of the technology.
That's just it. I think this piece just is an establishment kind of a piece, as you would expect from Harvard Business Review. You know, it just kind of flies in the face of the huge opportunity that the internet has created it for entrepreneurship, you know.
Well, yeah, but still, those jobs aren't the entrepreneurship that is an outgrowth of the internet is not necessarily a business that's going to create a lot of jobs.
Well, but it's created a lot of opportunity for new ventures. I'd love to see Mark Andreessen's come back on this one, because software is eating the world. Cars aren't cars anymore. Cars are software. You know, and you know, times are definitely changing. But, you know, I think this is sort of an an old man's look at things. You know,
I disagree. I think it's a, good piece. I really do. I think it's it's a realistic piece to look at. You know, you compare, you're comparing technology growth and tech, you know, what technology has done for, you know, the economy. And yeah, compared to the internal combustion engine, internet's done, has done nothing near what the internal combustion engine did for the economy. So,
Boy, I don't know. I question where he's going with this whole thing. I don't think he draws any great conclusions. I'll be very interested to see what Mark Andreessen and others comment on this one. It's probably fairly new, so people haven't had a chance. March 30th to maybe. Well, I haven't read the comments either, but I'm sure he will arouse a lot of commentary on it, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's going to be hard to dispute the facts on this one. I don't think you're going to be able to wax over this, guys.
You know, that point that Steve brought up about millennials and not buying cars.
Sure.
One of the things that they're looking at is that this generation is saddled with, you know, high debt. Yep. And a lot of them aren't choosing to go down the same road of buying a house and all that stuff. They're renting, or they're building these little bitty small houses,
the
tiny houses. And you can build a pretty nice little house for 30 grand and you don't have no mortgage. And, you know, so I think that that's going to change the economy quite profoundly. If a lot of them move down that path and they don't buy two cars, for instance, you know, for example, and or they don't buy any cars, and maybe they just use Uber or
That's what's amazing to me. That's what's amazing to me. And yeah, I see that every day, working with the people that I work with, because they, you know, much younger than I, and you know, most of the guys are riding their bikes, they're taking the bus, they're, you know, they're sharing a car, they're, you know, now granted that's, you know, a lot of the things that you do are, you know, in younger life, but yeah, I think the priorities are different, and the technology has enabled the ability not to, you know, not to partake in some of the standard businesses we've all grown up with. So,
they'd rather have iPhones than sure. buy a car, you know?
Right. Yep. So, because it allows them to do things that, you know, they would have to drive to do. So, But another good read is this, the story, the secret history of the Apple Watch that Wired put out. I don't know if you guys had a chance to look at that piece.
I know it was good.
So if you get a chance to take a peek at that, the whole concept of...
Did David Pierce leave The Verge? Because he wrote this for Wired. I don't know if this was a freelance piece or...
No. Yeah, they write for all kinds of different outlets. Yeah, the gist of this one was that, you know, technology is taking our attention away too much with our doggone phones, you know, looking down at our phones constantly. And
why not we'll replace that with looking at our wrist? That'll be all right.
Yeah. Well, it's a much less interruptive kind of a thing. And it's a natural extension to the new technologies and, you know, and will it affect iPhone sales ongoing? Well, I'm sure Apple would rather it didn't, but it's a companion device to the phone. But
when they have it untethered from the phone.
Right.
And that's when this thing is going to take off. I don't think it's going to take off. I mean, they're going to sell 5 million or whatever, 6 million of these things. But I think that sales will level off or go down after that. When they untether it from the iPhone, that's when it's going to really rock it up. When anyone could buy one of these things.
Right. Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll carefully control that. I mean, there are things you can do with it without a phone, but not that many. That will increase over time. But I thought it was an excellent piece. And, you know, Kevin Lynch really opened up. It's an interview with him. I guess he's CTO or whatever they call him.
Right.
And no, he's like VP of technology.
Yeah, and he's the guy that, you know, that was brought in to shepherd this whole project. And, you know, I think it's worth a read for those doubters, especially who aren't going to go out and buy one at 2:01 a.m. on Friday the 10th. Right, Steve?
3:01 a.m. Or is that
3:01 a.m.?
Is that?
No, I thought it was midnight Pacific.
It's midnight Pacific.
Oh, so it's 3:01. Okay, Eastern is what I read. Okay,
East time, got it.
2:01. Yeah. Set the alarm. Get up. Or
are you really going to do that? Are you going to do that?
I might do that. Yeah.
If you're going to get the base model,
up at 5 a.m. and do it then.
If you're going to get the base model, I bet you could just walk into a store and buy one on release day.
I bet you can't get it till the 24th.
I remember the iPhone. I remember the when the 6 and 6 Plus came out. I remember getting up. It was the first time I'd ever done that to purchase it at 201. And it was like, I tried for an hour to get through and just, I finally gave up and went to bed, got up at, got online again at 8 a.m. the next day and plenty of phones to be had. So
yeah. That's probably what I'll do. There'll be this huge rush. At two. That happened to Steve once where you were trying to buy something in the middle of the night, right, Steve?
And exactly.
Couldn't get through.
Well, and the only kicker is, Graham, if you don't do it, you'll end up walking around with a pink watch band. So, Graham, nice watch, buddy.
I was planning on getting pink. Now stop.
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry.
I got to have the black with the silver case. That's all I want.
I need is the black with the silver case.
Yeah, I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, Tim, I'm sure you put this in here, but I was actually going to put one in for my cool thing of the week.
Yeah, this would normally be my cool thing of the week, but I found another one.
Tell what it is.
So it's basically a stick, US or HDMI stick that Asus is coming out with that will turn any television or monitor that accepts HDMI into a Chrome PC, so a Chromebook.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's going to be under $100. So I imagine it'll be $99 or maybe $79, something like that. But we had talked about that HDMI Chrome stick or Intel stick that runs Windows for $150 before. And this is very interesting. I certainly will check these out when they do arrive this summer.
So how do you, the wireless keyboard?
Yep. Yeah, Bluetooth. Yeah, you do Bluetooth keyboard and mouse.
Does it have a Chromecast built into it?
To a degree, yes, because Chrome OS, you can...
We can make the browser go full screen.
Well, what you do is you install the Chrome plugin into a Chrome, the Chrome browser, which you can do on a Mac or PC right now. And you can Chromecast from your computer to the Chromecast.
And it has a USB port in it, which I thought was really cool. Anyway.
Yep.
Kind of looks like an inhaler to me. I don't know.
It looks like an inhaler.
This is a cool development.
The Google Chrome inhaler.
Well, see, what I thought was interesting about it was that, because I've got all kinds of extra ports, because I use a receiver with HDMI. So I've got five inputs and one output. So my TV is basically a dumb display, but I have three extra ports in my TV. So I could plug this into the TV because, I mean, I don't need to route audio through my TV back to the receiver so it'll come out the speakers if I'm doing email or something. But wouldn't that be cool? You just
do email? I want really high quality stereo ding.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I just thought
before we get into like the security tip of the week and the cool things of the week, now probably the cool thing of the week, probably good warning is that it could easily be an April Fool joke. So because April Fools is big on the internet, and I was looking for some gadgets and things like that. It's like, oh well, wait a minute, this isn't real.
Yeah.
So, which did you guys see any of the April Fool's stuff online?
I thought it was the worst April Fool's that I've seen ever.
Really?
Yeah, there weren't very many funny things. All the Google ones, that one with the mailbox was slightly funny, but it wasn't hilariously funny. I thought that of everything, Samsung with their the Blade. Whatever.
Yeah, the blade, the chopper.
The Galaxy Blade Edge that you could also chop your food. I thought that was mildly funny.
I was in the rural area of Kansas, so I had absolutely no internet access. So I really kind of missed out on the whole April Fool's thing. But I did like the was it Motorola that did the selfie stick, the handcrafted selfie stick?
Yeah, a lot of
That was kind of cute.
A lot of selfie sticks. Twitter did one too.
Well, so back in
that in and of itself is somewhat of an April. That's that thing. The selfie stick is just a joke. That's one of those things that you think, my God, that's one of the cottage industries we could have done away with in the internet, I think.
Well, so I did a post in April 1st of 2007 on my own blog called Why There Are No Technoweenie Geek or Propellerhead Comedians. And it's basically the entire post is about, you know, what you think isn't funny? It's just not funny. I mean,
not funny.
It's just, you know, and everybody's trying to be clever and, you know, this and that. It's just, this stuff is just not funny. If it was, that'd be great.
Some years it has been, but
yeah. 2012, I did another one. Grandma even chuckles at toddler farts. And it was about the same thing. I mean, it was about all the online stuff. And it's like, yeah, there were things that were getting better. You know, some of the stuff that Google does has some value to it because it's clear they've worked really hard, but still it's just like, come on, geeks.
You can do better, geeks.
You can do better. Yeah.
Although the HBO show Silicon Valley is kind of funny for geeks. Do you guys watch that?
I do. I love it. Absolutely love the show.
I've started to get into it.
Yeah. I think it is so spot on and well done. And yet, it's not written by geeks, I guess. You know, so.
Well, I don't know. I was reading where, they have many writers, and I don't know if this guy shows up on the credits or not. I've just started watching it. Isn't it into the second season now?
Yes.
Hasn't come out yet.
Almost, yeah.
But anyway, Dan Lyons, I saw, credited himself.
Oh, the old fake Steve Jobs.
If he's a writer on it, that... That makes it even better because that guy's great. But there's a whole bunch of writers. But, you know, what gets me about that is it's so well acted and directed and, you know, and it seems real.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Hey, Tim, we are probably the two that live closest to the country, yet we still don't see a lot of horses.
I know. I have to go down the street quite a ways to,
see some. That can be corrected.
Can it?
Yeah. Well,
see security tip of the week.
There they are.
And that's
oh my gosh. Are. All right.
All right.
So
Steve's here's the tip of the week is?
Well, first off, you're never going to have a fire at your house, right? And the firefighters will never douse those flames with water, right?
Only if there's a food truck that's parked next door.
That's right. Well, So a lot of us use online backup strategies, but you know, if you want to back stuff up in your house, I am going to heartily endorse buying a fireproof and waterproof hard drive. I've had one for almost 2 years now, made by a company called IOSafe, and it's a 3 terabyte. And I just had to order a bigger drive. They're sold out of the 6 terabytes, so I had to buy a 4. What it is it's a drive that, you know, it's a big bulky drive, but it protects data from loss up to 1550 degrees Fahrenheit for a half an hour.
Is this like the one that Hillary Clinton had?
I don't know. Yeah. Right. For her server. Yeah. And it protects data from loss up to 10 feet of water for 72 hours.
So I know you heartily endorse this, but have you ever tested it?
No, but they've got this data recovery service, so they'll do up to $5,000 of forensic recovery, and they'll give you a new drive.
But I'm saying that if for some reason, I mean, have you ever tried to, you know, drop it in water or you know, take a flamethrower to it?
No, but come on.
Which are available.
So it's promising. You know, how many people have actually tested that this thing is fireproof and this thing is waterproof?
You are such a doubter. Go to their website.
I'm just curious.
The testimonials, look at the case studies. You know, I did all this research.
The testimonials. Yeah, my house went up in flames and thank God my IOSafe was there because I couldn't touch it, but all my stuff was safe.
Well, I will tell you what, there's a neighbor that lived 3 doors down from my dad, and they had a fire in their kitchen. and that's where the computer was, and they lost all of their digital photos. Mm-hmm. And they had videos that they'd shot that they were editing on their computer. Those are all, everything's gone because they didn't have anything backed up offsite, or they didn't have one of these things.
So, I mean, let's see, if you've got a fireproof and waterproof server, now, obviously the connections,
it's not a server, it's just an external hard drive.
It's a hard drive. Yeah. So, but obviously there's connectors to that, right? Like a USB or a, you know, something like a lightning bolt or.
Yeah, it's USB 2 and 3.
Right. So what happens to those connectors? Don't they melt?
Probably.
Well, yeah, but what you would do is you'd pack up the drive and you'd send it to their data recovery service.
Right. And they pull it out.
Yeah. And they also apparently do something with Kroll on track. So I could go, you know,
you would
2 minutes from my house
to someplace else that you'd never see. So you're safe. You're secure with that. So if you're going to send it off to somebody to recover it, why wouldn't you just store it in the cloud?
Well, because my drive.
Am I being contrarian enough?
You are. Yeah, but my drive is actually, just listen. My drive, I use File Vault on my Mac. Uh-huh. And so the drive itself is encrypted. So they would pull all the data off. They wouldn't have to decrypt the data to get the data back.
That's right.
All they'd have to do is just literally do a byte by byte copy of the data.
So encrypted in the cloud then.
Oh, for God's sakes, Phil. Because you know what? 4 terabytes, in all seriousness, maxing out my 20 megabit per second up, I've figured out would take 38 days of upload time.
It would.
Yeah, to be able to do 3 terabytes. And now I'm going to get a 4 terabyte. Anyway, the punchline is the 4 terabyte is $7.99 list price. But yes. Costco has it for $2.99 right now.
That's pretty good for 4 terabyte of storage, no matter where you go.
Well, yeah.
To have your own airline black box in your house.
That's essentially what it is. It is. All right.
Does it have a beacon that goes off? Or?
There you go. All right. So let's go to the cool thing of the week, kids. Tim, you go first this time.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So it seems like there are a number of Raspberry Pi laptop options, and I will talk about the one that I found to be the coolest, which is called Pi Casa, which is a kit that you put your Raspberry Pi into, and it converts into a very small but good-looking, pretty much, laptop for about $99.
Pretty much.
Good-looking if it's the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think this was developed for kids.
They steal that from Coleco? It looks like that's a Coleco.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? And what's funny is it doesn't come with a battery either. So, and there's no place for it. So you have to have it plugged in all the time. But anyway, $99. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, give me a break,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it's a cool idea. There will be many others. In fact, I found another one that looks much better than this. And it does have a battery, but it's a lot more expensive.
That's very cool.
So anyway, it is a cool thing.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Mr. Graham?
Oh, my gosh. I'm not a real Mustang fan, but this Revology brand new 1960s Mustang is pretty doggone cool. Gizmag had a piece on it. And, you know, it looks like the real thing with all the modern technologies in it. It's like $110,000 or something for a really car.
So have they've taken a stock Mustang, 60s Mustang, and added all this to it, or have they built it from the ground up?
They're building it from the ground up, I believe.
Well, and you know what? I know. Can I answer? Yeah, so, sure. So this goes back about 2 years ago, maybe 2.5 years ago, Ford announced that they would be making chassis and bodies available for some of their classic cars. Four companies like this to go out and essentially rebuild or build a new one. And so essentially what you're getting here is you're not getting an old chassis and an old body, you know, all sanded down and redone. This is actually a brand new chassis and new body.
Yep.
So I think that's pretty cool. So they're going to be able to crank these bad boys out. I mean, I can see it now. Everybody in the Twin Cities with a $120,000 retro Mustang.
Yeah.
You know,
pretty amazing. And there's a link in here to some other ones too, like the Shelby-based Renovo Coupe. Yeah. Take a look at that thing. But you know, I've always wanted to have a replica, and I still wish I'd have bought, you know, the bathtub Porsche from the 50s, the Speedster replica that I saw in San Clemente. It was like perfect, you know, with a Volkswagen chassis. And the guy only wanted $18,000 for it. And it's like, I looked at this thing and I thought, I'll never own a Porsche Speedster in my lifetime. But by God, I would drive this thing, you know, and I'm still kicking myself I didn't buy it. But
yeah, it's a really good looking car. Trouble is, I could never fit in it. I can never fit into Mustangs. Oh,
yeah.
They're just really too small. Yeah.
Yeah, but get the rag top and you can just hang your legs out.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I remember, I'm trying to drive one of those around. We did a promotion ages ago when I was in radio, and we gave away a new Mustang and a classic Mustang. And I remember having to drive the 65.5 Mustang to an event somewhere and constantly turning the damn turn signal on with my knee. So just that small. But they're a great looking little car. And I think that's kind of cool. I have applause. That's a cool thing.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, well, I won't be buying it, but, you know, I thought I'd point it out.
Nothing says we have to buy this stuff. Steve buys his stuff.
I think I'd rather get a Tesla P85D if I was going to spend that kind of money.
There you go.
Okay, so Phil, what's yours?
Mine's a little bit of a throwback. I happened to be on Reddit and saw some stuff on this, on the Google Cardboard. I don't know if you've seen the Google Cardboard. It's basically the sort of the poor man's Oculus Rift. It's a virtual reality headpiece that's all made out of cardboard that, you know, incorporates an Android phone into it to take advantage of the virtual reality experience. I also was reminded a few weeks ago when Chuck did his VR piece at Mobile March. So I thought I'd just that throwback.
That is funny. Yeah. You know, all the talk about this Oculus Rift and all the money that's being spent and it's like Google just goes and does it with a piece of cardboard.
Yeah.
I think it's a riot.
It is great.
I really do.
I remember when that first came out. I was like, really? And then you try it and it's like, wow.
See, I didn't know about this. And when you put the link in there, I thought, okay, it's an April Fool's joke.
Oh, you didn't know about this?
I didn't know about it.
Oh, no.
Yeah. This was at Google I.O. a couple of years ago.
I paid no
attention to it whatsoever. So
that's cool.
But it has more applicability now that, you know, Oculus has become such a huge thing and Facebook's getting into it. It's crazy the money that's going to that. Yeah. And you can just get it. So what does this cost?
That's $3 or $4, I think. So.
Well, some of them are more expensive. So if you look at the buy a viewer thing, you'll see some of them are like $25.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them are, you know, very inexpensive.
Well, yeah. And let's see, what is the cheapest one is?
I've seen these
which is like the Dodo case, I think is what that's called. I don't remember.
I think it's funny.
I have seen them for very inexpensively, but these are all look like they're, you know, more expensive.
Yeah.
The question I have is, do they have an iPhone version?
Don't think so yet.
Sorry. No, they don't.
Sorry, my friends.
Get an Android phone.
Okay, so my cool thing is an app that I totally stumbled across. Even though it's been out for a long time, I guess. John Gruber at Daring Napkin, it's called.
Never heard of this.
John Gruber at Daring Fireball talked about it, and I ended up doing I'll put a link to my review on my own blog. But basically, it's an app that kind of mashes up Photoshop and Apple's Keynote to very quickly. You can do screenshots in it. You can quickly and easily add arrows and text and all of that. And I put in this, and you can share it in a bunch of different ways.
$40. Ooh.
Well, it is. Yeah. It's a little on the spendy side, but I looked at the fact that literally 6 to 12 times a day, I'm doing screenshots and I'm annotating things and sending things to people. And here's how you do this. Here's how you do that. And I put in my review, I put in my pre-napkin workflow and my post-napkin workflow. And there were 5 steps in the pre-napkin and there were 2 steps in the post-napkin. But actually, it's actually a little more efficient even than that. And so I figure I'm saving, significant time every single day now using this goofy little app that is just making it so much simpler. Because, I mean, how many times do you do screenshots and send stuff to people? Maybe you That's don't, true. But I do it all the time. I mean, I'm doing it constantly during the day where I have to point something out specifically to somebody that they might not even be seeing. And this is where you do it, or this is where you click, or here's the code that you need to pay attention to and so forth. And, you know, to do a screencast, everybody goes, well, why not just do a screencast? Because then you can tell them two or three things. Well, okay, so you got to do the screencast, then you've got to export the video, or you got to upload it somewhere and, you know, provide it to them, or you got to have a Dropbox link, or yada, yada, yada. And then what platform are they on? I mean, it's just significantly more complicated. And this really cuts the time down dramatically. So anyway, so that's my thing.
Cool. And you just did your post yesterday.
I did.
Review. Yeah, I did. This is great. So, everyone should go to Connecting the Dots and read this. It's good.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, how about events? Are there any upcoming events? Nope. I guess not. Okay.
Yeah. My God, it's still going. The event season is going crazy.
Oh man.
Yeah, there's two events Tuesday that I'm going to be hitting. The Spring Mojo Mixer in the evening, overlapped by the Field Nation Colo Grand Opening downtown at their offices. They have like a co-working thing they're doing for their users now. I don't know if that's open to the public or if it requires an invitation, but take a look. That's a hot local startup, I guess you could say, Field Nation.
And on their website, they all said free beer and munchies except for Graham Thickens.
Oh, darn.
Here's will be $25.
Oh, darn. Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm going to drop in there. And then the next day is the MobCon digital health event, which has got written up in the Tribune a couple days ago. And they're saying they're expecting 450 people at that thing.
Yep.
Which surprised me. So,
and then mini bars next Saturday. Wow.
Yeah.
I believe that's actually 200 people then. So you get a, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you got to be a little skeptical of that.
You got to be a little skeptical about that. Hey, it's what you do for an event.
That's right.
But mini bar, that'll be 1,000 plus. So we'll have a busy Saturday next week.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how we'll do our podcast, but we'll figure something out.
And there's another new one that somebody put in here, Appalooza at the Minneapolis.
Appalooza. The Technovation MN event. It's where, you know, we've been mentoring young women as far as, you know, mobile development, and that's where they present. Yep. So it's always a good time.
Cool.
It's at the convention center this year.
So. Nice. Wow. Nice.
Big time.
All right. Well, I guess that's the show, boys.
Yeah, I guess. We need to start cutting these back again, guys. We're talking too much.
I know.
So next week we'll cover everything that's exciting in technology here, and we'll do it shorter on
the Minovate Gang podcast.
Have a good week.
Take care.
Have a great weekend.